WIOX is supported by you and the following underwriters. The Catskill Mountain Foundation, celebrating decades of arts on the mountaintop with countless performances, classes, and community events each year, from Grammy Award-winning music to dance and art classes for all ages, including classical music, April in Paris, a romantic conversation, and musical stroll through the City of Lights with musicologist Dr. Jeffrey Lanford and pianist Dr. Joanne Polk, Saturday, April 13th at 2 p.m. More information at CatskillMTN.org. Nainu, the shop of Mother Earth, a Peruvian boutique for clothing and hats, blankets and bags, rugs, pillows and decorative pieces using sustainable organic materials. Nainu, the shop of Mother Earth, Main Street in Margaretville, New York, 917-701-2496, 917-701-2496. Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. This is WIOX Roxbury, your live and local soundtrack for winter in the Catskills. As you cruise through local towns and villages like Delhi, Davenport, Stamford, Hobart, for rare books, bright lights, meditative days, and karaoke nights. Find links to winter happenings in the Catskills at WIOXradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, 107.5 FM, on the campus of SUNY Delhi, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org on computers or smartphones. This is From the Forest every Wednesday. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan, John, Zara, and Zane. We got everyone in tonight. How's it going?
Oh, things are good. What's up, Brian?
Well, you know, I'm enjoying the 60-degree weather in March. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's nice out.
Yeah, you can't beat it today.
Outside pruning apple trees with short-sleeve shirts, you know. I'm not going to complain about it. I could.
You
I'm
should?
Not going to. I don't think I should. No. I don't think I should. We've been pruning just about every day since the 2nd or so of January, and it feels very warm. So, you know, we're very well acclimated to the winter, so when 60 degrees comes, I think it feels a lot warmer. You know, like, you're acclimated when like, gets into, like, 50 degrees and you roll down your window and you got your arm out the window.
Yeah, and you got to think about it the opposite way. It's like, if this was July and happening, how cold would you feel?
Right.
You know?
Right. Totally. So, Anyway, this is a forestry check-in. We do it either the first or second Wednesday of each month or so. But how's everyone doing? What have you guys been up to?
Pretty good. I had my first shiitake log inoculation as part of a CFA's forest farming program today, and that went really well. So, and I showed up with this fleece on that I'm wearing now and had to take it off immediately stepping outside. So I'm not complaining
either.
Catskill
Forest Association, and that's forest farming program?
Yep. Yeah. So we're exiting maple season now, and so that was the last portion of it. But so I got to do transition into teaching members, landowners, how to grow shiitake mushrooms. So
is it a one-stop visit? What do you do right now?
Yeah, one-stop visit. So you can harvest the tree. So essentially I go and help them cut down a tree, a small tree, 4 to 6 inches diameter. And we buck it up right on the spot. And I bring all the stuff you'd need for inoculation. And then we just walk through the process right there on the property. So I inoculated 5 logs with the member today. And went really well. The weather was beautiful. We cut down a small sugar maple that was kind of multi-stemmed. It was a little bit suppressed, so wasn't in a good spot anyway. So we got it down, and now hopefully she'll have shiitake mushrooms next year. So,
and what tree species was it again you cut down?
We did sugar maple, but oak is preferred for shiitake. So white and red oak. White is best, but you know, a lot of people's forests, I expect to use other species like sugar maple, red maple. You could even use ironwood. But just because, you know, in general, we're trying to keep oak in the forest around these parts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those are generally the species that shiitake likes.
So you cut it down, drilled it already, plugged it?
Yep. All set. All took a couple hours. But, yeah, pretty smooth process, and
You cooking with that stuff yet, shiitake? You eating? What's the deal?
Yeah, I cook with shiitakes. I think they're really good added to almost anything. If you're making a stir fry, you can add them to eggs. You can add them to, I mean, you name it, soup.
You cut it up finely or just slivers? Like, how do you do it? What do you do?
I cut up the cap, and actually with mushrooms, it's better to dry saute them. So instead of adding a fat right away to the pan, they have moisture in them that they'll release. So to prevent them from getting kind of soggy when you're cooking them, you just throw them in like a dry cast iron or something like that and just stir them around for a while, let them get kind of toasty. And then if you want, you can add in some butter to kind of finish at the end. But yeah. Yeah. Lots of stuff you could do with them.
So those logs you drilled today, how soon do you think they can expect to flush in mushrooms?
It depends. So it can take anywhere. I mean, as soon as sometimes like 6 months, but that's, I would say that's probably a little rare, more like 8 months to a year. So I would say she could expect, the member today who I inoculated logs for, could expect mushrooms next spring. Potentially in the fall, but banking on next spring more likely.
That's not bad.
Yeah. But then after that, you can get multiple flushes throughout the season. And then as a general rule of thumb, for each diameter inch is 1 year of production for the mushrooms. So if you have a 6-inch diameter bolt or log, you theoretically have about 6 years of mushroom production in that log.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Why shiitake? Is that just a chosen favorite, or that's what's going to work?
Kind of both. I mean, it's one of those beginner-friendly mushrooms that's, like, really easy to get started. It's not difficult. It's not like a finicky type of mushroom that needs, you know, like lion's mane, for example. That's a medicinal mushroom that most people are familiar with. And you can cultivate it, but it's a lot more tricky. You know, it takes potentially 2 years to before it's going to actually produce a mushroom. So shiitake's pretty quick turnaround, you know, about a year, a little bit less than a year. And you just essentially, as long as you know the species of trees that you need and you can plug the holes with spawn, you know, there's not that much else you need to know to grow them. And most people know what they are already. You know, you can cook with them. And oyster's another one that's a good beginner-friendly mushroom. And they can also be inoculated in logs, but they also, there's a what's called the stump method, where you take a a stump or a thicker log and kind of cut it like a layer cake, different thick cookie slices. And you can layer spawn, which would be sawdust with the mycelium in it, between those layers, cover it with a paper bag and kind of just let it sit. And it'll also fruit oyster mushrooms. So, yeah. But yeah, shiitake is kind of just like the most common or most well-known mushroom that you can grow pretty easily.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Plus oysters, you know, you can find. They're pretty commonly found, but shiitake, you know.
Yeah, shiitake's not.
Tastes so good.
Yeah, they do taste. They have this, like, you know, the classic umami flavor, and you can find oysters, right, growing in the wild around here, but you won't find shiitakes, so.
I'd say that they might be one of the most common.
Oysters?
Oysters, yeah.
Find them all over the place, but oftentimes on, I find them on beach.
Mm-hmm.
Beach and maple, right?
Right, yeah, I see a lot on soft maple.
Yeah.
But they grow on a few different, a lot of the softer hardwoods, and aspen even, they grow on aspen as well. But,
I've seen them just in piles of mulch, it's fresh mulch, they grow up in it.
Yeah.
Man, I was a little sick last week. My wife made a bunch of soups. We had a good crop of golden chanterelles last summer.
Yeah.
I picked a whole bunch then and dehydrated them. And I tell you what, putting them in soups this time of year is phenomenal.
Wow.
It's just a different texture and flavor, and the chicken noodle soup was on a different level because of that. They really, really made it pop. So I recommend to anyone who wants to do that next year, easy to dehydrate, and they kept really well.
Yeah. I can dehydrate. You have a dehydrator?
Yeah, just a dehydrator. Yeah. You could do it in the oven if you wanted to,
mm-hmm.
on a convection mode.
That's my favorite mushroom, golden chanterelles.
Yeah, me too.
I love them. But maple season is over. You guys want to talk about that a little bit since
that's
about done, even though this weekend is New York State Maple Weekend, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think they do it two weekends now. That's the next two weekends coming up.
Oh, so. It's the next two?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a little late in my opinion, but unfortunately, maybe they'll get some boils. If not, they'll boil water or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I plan to go tour a few of them around here on the first weekend.
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the trees that I have tapped, I still got the buckets on them, but those trees have all shut off. So I just have to set some time aside to pull the taps and clean everything. But I made about 1.82 gallons.
About?
Pretty precise.
Roughly.
Did you say
1.82.
Like you're going to the 100th.
You could have said about 2 gallons.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I don't know.
Man, Zane is, you're getting really exact, man. Maybe.
Yeah, I'll pull back. I don't know.
All right. So how did it go?
12 tabs.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's about, I think I have it, that's about, it's about 20 ounces per tab of syrup.
When'd you tap?
I started January 21st, so real early, and that's because that's what the temperature showed, and I think I made the right choice.
Yeah, it seems like, from what I'm hearing, most people who tapped early, that was the move this year. So
That's the move, man. You got to tap when, you know, the weather's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the second time I've done it, but, I can tell I haven't made as much as last year. My records aren't really sound, but this year I tried to make them a little bit more. So, yeah, not as much.
So, 20 ounces. You're throwing me off here.
Yeah.
It's under a quart per tap, though. I know that. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 ounces of the 16 ounces in the... Man, you're really, really messing me up.
32 ounces.
32 ounces.
Sorry.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry, my brain shut off for a second. Okay. I did. I cut back on what I normally do for the second year in a row. Just had other projects going on that took my time, but I still wanted to make some. So I tapped my two best trees, just two, and I reduced down on the wood stove every night. I tapped the week after Zane. There was a little freeze window after that initial thaw. I just wanted to miss that because I was really scaling back. So I wanted to hit that sweet spot exactly. And I ended up with 0.47 gallons of syrup per tab. I ended up with 8 ounces shy, a half pint shy of a full gallon off two tabs, which blew my mind. This records keeping wise and, you know, gallons per tap wise, best year I ever had. But you got to remember, I tapped my two best trees. And if everybody only tapped their couple of best trees, they'd probably have better records than that every year. But I don't know. I learned a lot from the wood stove method. I learned that my house can reduce about 2 gallons of sap per day on an average night. And on a really cold night when I'm putting, you know, 5 sticks of wood on the fire, I'm talking in the teens, I'm doing about 4 gallons in a night. And that's borderline too much. That's the point at which condensation's gathering on my windows. So
that's not a big deal, right?
It's not a big deal, not at all, because again, the house is so dry that time of year, and it's not like things are dripping down my window and soaking my windowsills. Not at all. It's just kind of just as if I was, you know, boiling a pot of spaghetti on the stove or something.
Yeah.
So I reduced every day during the weekday, and then finished on the weekends, and I did it in 2 batches.
Stainless steel pot.
I bought a food service pan, a steam pan.
Huh.
It was a full pan, a 6-inch deep pan, so I could fit about 6 gallons of sap in it. And it was a good method because with 2 taps, I didn't outpace myself too bad when it would really run more than 2 gallons per tap, which it only did once for me. I stored it in a single 5-gallon bucket outside, and then I would dump it in, and then I would catch back up on a weekend, and that's how I did it. It worked.
I knew a guy. He's a dentist, so he was working down New Jersey a lot, but he would do it there when he was back at his second home years ago up in Spruston. And he would do it all on his stove.
Yeah,
he would make like five, I don't remember, but like somewhere between 5 and 8 gallons. Like, he'd really do it, but he had cathedral ceilings. And he never had a problem with condensation. But so I think if you have cathedral ceilings,
yeah,
you can boil a lot more inside.
Yeah, air volume is a big deal because I've got a ranch house with 7-foot ceilings, which is about as small as space, you know, you're going to get on a full-size house or whatever. But and that was, it was showing, like I said. You could
yeah.
Especially in the bathroom.
Well, who has wallpaper anymore?
Nobody's got wallpaper, but, you know, in spaces that I got less circulation or were moist already, like in the bathroom, that's when I was looking at it like, huh, I don't know if I like this, but then it would go away, so.
Yeah, I would think so.
But no, no mess, other than one time I spilt a little bit of sap on my wood stove top and didn't realize it, didn't wipe it down. And in the morning, it was caked down, it reduced down to a little bit of sugar, and not a big deal, other than my wood stove was new 2 years ago, so now there's a little burn spot on the top of it.
That's
so,
all right.
It's broken now.
How many gallons did you end up with, Ryan?
So I got 17 taps, 7.5.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
7.5, so that's 0.44 gallons per tap.
You go through all that syrup, or you give some away?
You know, I probably only consume like maybe 2, 3.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I still have last year's.
Yeah.
So I don't keep track of it, but you know, it's like my neighbor. He's a roofer. A shingle blew off. Every time the wind blows, something bad happens. And he says, you know what? You probably don't know what you're doing. I'm like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. He's like, I'll go up there tomorrow. I was like, okay. And then, you know, I give him a pint.
Yeah, barter, you know what I mean? Bartering.
It works out, stuff like that. I had a guy down the road. He's a jack of all trades. He looked at my plumbing, my oil boiler. It was something that the blow-off valve blew off a little bit of steam, and I had him look at it. You know, I only use it when my in-laws come up or I go away. And, you know, he said, nah, it's not a problem or whatever. But, you know, so I gave him a quart or a pint or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's kind of what it gets used for.
Yeah.
Holidays and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then I do sell some. I do sell a little bit just to, there's some customers, believe it or not. There's like maybe 1 to 4 of them per year that want a gallon, and I'll sell it to them, and that'll pay for like all my, you know, supplies
right.
for the next year. So I don't spend any money on sugaring really, except for my time. But that little 2x3, I used to make 25 gallons of syrup on it.
Wow.
Yeah, back when I used to boil till 3, 4 in the morning, literally. You know, it was crazy.
Oosh.
I never hit But the truest way to see how you did is to do it by the tap. So even back then, I made maybe 0.25 to 0.3, maybe 0.35 tops per gallon, gallons of syrup per tap. I used to tap like 60. Well, yeah, I had like 61 taps. I made 25 gallons. Okay, so what's the math on that, right? It's not half. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, 0.3 or less, right?
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, ever since I started tapping only the best, you know, like the best 20, one year I made 0.6 something, and I would have crushed it and gotten 0.75 if I had gone longer, but I was done, we were going away or something. I think it would have gotten 3 quarts.
Do you know your average sugar content, sugar percentage? Or do you not really pay attention?
I record it every day. I have to add it up, but it's, I mean, if it gets below 2.4, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
So it's usually somewhere between 2.3 and 2.9.
Nice.
Once in a while, 3.1, 3.2%. It was like that in January. So that, you know, I was writing an article recently on maple myths, and yeah, you've heard it. If you tap too early, the sugar content's not there. I have not, my records don't show that. Maybe it's different somewhere else, but I have not seen that yet. I hate when people say that's wrong. I'm not going to say that. It's just that I haven't seen that. So, what, I don't know. And the sap, I haven't seen, like, we need hard winters. That was another one I brought up. We need hard winters to have a good sugaring season. I haven't seen that either. And this is my 18th year. We've had hard winters, we've had soft winters, and it doesn't seem to have a bearing. The only thing that seems to have a bearing is the temperature. Is it in the 40s?
Right.
Is it in the 20s at night? The sap runs, you know?
Yeah, that's the magic formula, right?
That's what it seems to be.
And I don't know. I mean, I've talked to two commercial producers pretty regularly, and there was some worrisome moments, but the general feel of both of them as of a week ago is that they were going to have average years.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yep. I don't know. Average is good. And if you can count on average and you plan for average, you're probably going to do okay.
I would say, yeah, it was an average year.
Yeah.
0.44 is about what I usually do. Plus or minus.
So I used to sell sap, but this is, you know, a different operation ago. And I could count on, looking back at my records, I can count on 9 to 17 collection days per season. And very good average being 12 collection events in the time that I would tap that bush. And there was years when people were, you could attest to this, you know, the people were screaming up the wall saying it's a great year, or screaming up the wall saying it's a terrible year. And I look back at records, and I could piece out which years were which. But it was always, on average, a very similar. I could count on a collecting sap 12 times for that sugar bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 4 to 6 weeks long, right? And like you said, collecting it 12 times, you have maybe... Yeah, I'd have to add that up and divide by whatever. But yeah, I bet you
there's better running sugar bushes than what I had. It was a mostly red maple bush, and they tend to not run as long.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I think a pure sugar maple bush might be a little higher than that. But
how do these myths persist? You know, if you're running an operation, you're keeping good records, and maybe you're seeing what you're seeing.
Well, I think change happens so quickly that you can't, and people aren't scaling records because of that. They might be scaling their operations up and down vastly. I've seen vast changes in a decade-long operation, and maybe, like I said, the records aren't scaling. That and maybe their sugar bushes aren't staying the same. One, physically, they may have switched properties completely. At first, just getting going, maybe they wanted to do 100 taps, and they maxed out all 100 taps on their 10 acres, 20 acres, and they took what they can get, and it was red maple included and whatever, and then they decided to go bigger, and they leased a great sugar bush, and then all of a sudden their numbers change. That could be part of it.
You gotta know how many taps you have accurately.
Accurately,
I mean, you really, because guys who start getting into the thousands, you wonder, if they're off by 50 or 100, it makes a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, and I've talked to guys now, too, and they're like, oh, we're somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000.
Yeah, and it's
okay,
like...
Okay, well, that, yeah,
that's,
I mean,
a big difference.
That's a 20% swing on your number right there. So,
sure.
Yeah. And what are you measuring with? How good is your record keeping? Are you really measuring everything the same every time?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Another myth, you know, I didn't bring that up, damn, in my article, is how much to go over syrup. So, you know, when you're boiling sap down, it's known that when it's 7.5 degrees above the boiling point of water, it's maple syrup.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So that equates to density, so like 67% or something.
Yeah,
66.6 if you really want to get... In Vermont, it's 67, I believe.
Right.
They're special.
On the brick scale, you're talking specific gravity.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so, but I go to 8.5.
Yeah.
And you know, now again, I'm not going to say, that's the way to go. It's the way I like it, and it's my thermometer. I use a Taylor Digital, so I don't know how inaccurate it could be. I mean, that's a good thermometer. But I used to go 7.5. And it's just too thin. Now, if you go too thick, you get crystallization. But at 8.5, I don't see it on my thermometer, the crystallization, and it's thick. I like it when it comes out. It stays there.
Yeah,
you know, on the food a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And that's something I switched to this year too. I decided, since you know, I'm only doing a little bit, I'll try something new. I went to 8.5 this year. I really like the consistency on that.
It's
but how
yeah.
much, like, to your point, like, how much extra liquid is that removing? I mean, it's measurable, but I haven't measured it. I don't know. So if you're going 8.5, would you have made 8 gallons?
Probably.
You know, is that a half a gallon for your year if you were going to 7.5?
Yeah,
right? I'd imagine.
It might be, you know, and then how you pour your quart jars, right? I mean, I pour them very close to the top, and that's over a quart each one. So.
Yeah, and that's true with bigger producers, too. Unless you're weighing the product, you don't actually know. So these guys are selling commercially. You know, they tear the barrels out, and they're weighing the product. So they know exactly how much syrup is in there, how much sugar is in there. But if you're selling by the jug, even someone filling the plastic jugs, you know, that fill line is, you know, 3/4 of an inch or to an inch down below the neck on that jug, but the consumer wants to open up that bottle and see syrup to the top.
Yeah.
So you add that up over hundreds of jugs in a day that some of these guys are producing. Maybe, you know, all of a sudden there's another 5% difference. Who knows?
You know, the reason why I do it, and it's probably not right, I just feel like I want it to be as hot as hell and to really seal.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you there.
Mm. That's really the reason why I do it.
I know. The worst is, you know, a year later you get a moldy jar, and it's like, well, what did I do wrong? What happened that day?
What, you ever get shrinkage on your bottles?
Shrinkage?
Yeah. I filled up,
like, the glass shrinking?
Well, I filled up to the rim of those glass bottles, those specialty glass bottles, and once it cooled, there was like 3/4 of an inch shrunk in the bottle, I noticed.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, that's physics. Right?
Depends how many beers I had, I guess.
You know, they change.
Expansion.
You're going to have expansion, right?
Really? I wouldn't think you would have that much, though.
Well, he's talking
you're talking about the big growlers?
The narrow neck.
Yeah.
Glass. He's not talking a ball jar.
Not a mason jar.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you put it in the fridge, too, it's shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's cooling. Molecules are going closer together. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it matters, because those, if you're making syrup based off of a hydrometer, there is temperature curve chart for the syrup and specific density of that liquid. So, you know, when I was making it, Sugarbush I was in, they spent the money, and they had a temperature, the jar that you, or the cup, the hydrometer cup had a thermometer in it, and then next to the draw off valve there's a little handwritten chart there. So because it's going into a cold metal thing every time, and so that's going to change your specific gravity, so we would have to do a quick conversion, make sure we're still on syrup. And then if you checked it 3 times in a row in a single minute, all of a sudden now that metal's hot in that cup, and you got to redo your conversion.
Amazing. Yeah, I know. I might go back to a hydrometer for that reason. I don't know. We'll see. What a pain. Because you do have to have that temperature right, really to have the most accurate. I got a book that I ordered off Amazon, and the guy made a collection of both present-day stories of maple sugaring and old ones he found on Google and stuff, you know, from the 1800s. And back then, they didn't make syrup in the early 1800s. They made only maple granulated sugar, so it's measured in the pounds. But from one guy doing his calculations, I figure he was at like 0.3 gallons per tap, if you were to convert it to gallons, somewhere in there. And it reminded me of when this old guy I was tapping in Margaville came over across the property line. You know, here he comes. I know he's going to tell me something, you know, like, you're not doing it right, or it used to be better. And he was. He did say that. It used to be better. So he said, these trees used to be a lot sweeter. And I think he's right in some ways, you know, but no one manages sugar bushes like that anymore. Back in the day, like, they would call them orchards. So they'd really thin around them to get the sunlight on them more, and that would boost the sugar content. You'd probably be really hard-pressed to find a sugar bush today that would reach over a quart per tap because they're so dense, right? I mean, but they don't need to because they have reverse osmosis anyway.
Yeah, well, like I said, so when I kept such diligent records when I was doing this salt and sap thing, and I would convert it. Since I was selling sap, I would do it the reverse. I would convert the theoretical yield to what that would produce in syrup. And then, of course, I'd have break it down by number of taps every year. It was 73% red maple in the sugar bush. And it was always like 0.17 to 0.25.
Oh, yeah?
But 0.17, 0.18, 0.19 gallons per tap is the theoretical yield on what that bush would have done. But like you said, it's all, you know, small to mid-sized saw timber, red maple, 73%. And then that 27% of sugar maple were the old hedgerow trees that were being consumed by the interior of this old farm field that I was tapping. And that was kind of boosting my numbers back a little bit.
Yeah. What about you, Zane? What do the trees look like that you're tapping?
These are all yard trees around the property, around the house.
Huh.
My best ones, I've tapped new ones by the road. So these are all really multi-stemmed sugar maples that have probably been mowed down and broken, but they've grown up to have a really substantial trunk. And so I've put several buckets on those, and they get a lot of nice afternoon sun. And then I got my two south-facing trees with my best tree that produces very, very well. And that was also the first tree to kind of shut off this year, too.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then I got a few trees in the woods, they do really well.
Are you tapping all sugar maples?
All sugar maples, yeah. I don't think I have any red maple on the property. If there are there, they're not big enough, but, yeah. And then there's another smaller section of woods with some nice sugar maples and some red maples, but they're all kind of pole-sized, not ready to tap, but that might be a project in the future.
Yeah, I'd have to look at my records. Maybe there was just fewer runs. It didn't, but I don't know. If there was a lot of runs, I never had that big. I only had one or two days where it ran a lot.
Yeah, the biggest yield I had was about half a gallon per bucket one day. That was the biggest.
Yeah, I misspoke. When did we go to the Arborist Conference? Was that the beginning of February?
I believe so.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't the end of January. Yeah, it was the beginning of February. So the beginning of February was the best weekend of sap flow for me. That day I went to Suffern, I got 42 gallons from 17 taps. So it's way over 2 gallons. If you get 2 gallons of sap per tap, that's a big run. And I missed out on the second day because we went to Suffern. Hmm. So damn it, I may have gotten to 0.5 then.
Yeah, on my best day.
My wife had to go out there and dump them on the ground because I wasn't there. I wanted fresh sap, so.
Yeah. Well, on my best day, I would be getting about six or seven gallons of sap from all my trees. And then I would just put it in kind of this unplugged fridge in the barn, and then I'd wait till that kind of accumulate and boil that during the week.
Yeah. Well, Anything else about maple sugaring?
I don't have a property to tap, but I did help, again, with the forest farming program at CFA. Helped a few of our landowners that we work with do some tapping, and I was surprised. You know, it seemed like, so the first few programs I did, there was one, actually one landowner who, you know, the weather was perfect. It had gotten into the teens the night before. The temperature outside was like 38, almost approaching 40. It was sunny out, clear skies. You know, I went out thinking, oh yeah, sap's definitely running. No issue here. And then we tapped 6 trees and not a single drop.
Isn't that amazing?
And so, yeah, I mean, it, wow. I've learned a lot just from helping people tap based on location, what side of the mountain you're on. If you're in a little hollow, you know, because he's like, oh, he emailed me and he's like, you know, my neighbor down the road got tons of sap. And, you know, I've only seen a few drops. And I'm like, well, you know, could be aspect. It could be, you know, because his trees were great. I mean, they're along the driveway. They're pretty, you know, tall, healthy, large crown sugar maples. And I couldn't determine any reason while I was there why they wouldn't be running.
Blacktop, and then, right? No blacktop driveway?
No. Nope. That's gravel. But on the contrary, in Bovina, I was helping another member tap, and they're like, or not Bovina, South Court, right? We were way up on top of a hill, like way up. And it was 29 degrees that day. So it was sunny, but definitely freezing still. And I wasn't expecting sap to be running. And then lo and behold, we go tap 3 trees on their property, and it's got a healthy flow. So I don't know. I was kind of like, well, you know, it depends. And it's not always the outside temperature exactly. You know, the sun's shining, if the trees get warmed up, if you're just in the right location. So you can kind of go by, you should go based on the weather, you know, but yeah. Also depends on where you are, where your trees are. So
yeah, when someone says it got up to this number today, you learn doing maple sugaring like where.
Right. Well, the thing is, too, is like
so many variables.
The weather report is for that, you know, a general area, you know, like for the town of X. But, you know, if you're in the town of X and you're up on, you know, a mountain and somebody else is, you know, it's like, well, up here it got up to whatever or down to whatever last night. So it's definitely very variable.
It sure is. North side, south side. I still believe that south wind thing. That was a myth that I thought was true. Not all myths are false or totally false, but Mike Porter, president of the Catskill Forest Association, used to say the south wind would shut them off. I do think that's true because I've had days in the 40s where they weren't running.
Yeah,
because it was a 15-mile-per-hour, 20-mile-per-hour south wind, and that's the warm side of the tree. So if they're getting, it's like you getting blasted with wind. It would cool you down, right? And the north side doesn't matter as much because you don't run on the north side as much anyway, usually. So I don't know. That one might, I think, I believe it.
Yeah.
But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. And tonight's topic is forestry check-in with the staff of the Catskill Forest Association. We'll be back.
Our love is alive.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's just a forestry check-in roundtable with the field staff of the Catskill Forest Association. We have Zara, Zane, John, myself, Ryan. So this Saturday is what now?
Our wild game potluck dinner. So down at the Margaretville Fire Hall. We're expecting a pretty good turnout. We've had nearly 50 people register, so
You
know, pretty shocking, but good in a good way, you know?
Yeah.
So anyone's welcome to bring a dish to pass that features something of the Catskill region. So it could be something you hunted, could be venison, fish, rabbit, bear, whatever you got, or something you foraged, you know, like leeks or, you know, anything else, mushrooms, as long as you positively identified it. Should be fun. Yeah, we're all going, so.
I'll be there. So what are you guys bringing? Come on. You don't want to spoil it, John?
All I got is maple, so, and I guess there's maple nuts going, and maybe I'll make something else.
Yeah, we got
you were going to make maple nuts, Zane?
Well, I don't know. Not now. But
or a tart. You could do some
tart,
type of
maple tart.
Yeah, we got about, so of those people that are coming, I would say about two-thirds to three-quarters of them say they're bringing dishes to pass. So we're probably going to have a lot of mix of different things. I don't know. I hope it's all good.
Maybe
you know,
a side dish, maple-glazed carrots.
Pollocks are the best.
Yeah.
They're the most underrated thing, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. Pollocks. Kidding me?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what people bring.
I don't know. We were just talking to a member down the road. He had some, I don't know, but I had some squab now.
What, pigeons?
He's complaining about
pigeons. I was
just
talking to Mike about that.
Flying around his barn.
Yeah.
That's French, dude.
Yeah, it's not too late. You still got 5 days till the potluck, so.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a small game, buffalo small game dip. Just keep it light. Chips.
Nice.
It's going to be, I was trying to do all squirrel, but man, my honey hole squirrel spot got turned down when I asked permission. So I only got
rejected.
I mean, I could see them in there from the road. I'm like, holy cow, look at all those squirrels. I bow hunted it in the past, and man, they're all around you. So no, they were more like pets than the deer were. So anyway, got a rabbit squirrel combo for the buffalo dip now.
Nice.
All right.
I don't have any games, so, but I'm thinking of, I did have some apple butter from apples that I collected over in Andes last year on some state land. So I might, you know, bring that by and have people, I don't know, spread it on something. Maybe I'll bake with it. I don't know. But
what about an apple pie? Come on.
Well, so I could put the apple butter in apple pie, but I'd have to buy apples from the store for that. But I also have chaga, lots and lots of chaga. So I'll probably make a batch of chaga tea, iced.
Yeah.
So that'll be nice. And then I was also thinking of just bringing some sourdough. I make sourdough pretty regularly, so I think, you know, that bread pretty much goes with everything, and can't have too much of that. So,
what do you guys hope to have there? What do you guys hope?
I don't know. Trichinosis.
Jesus, John, you know.
Come I'm just on.
Kidding. Ironically, I just got the last edition of the New York Outdoor News.
You know, you're always a downer. Here we go.
That scares folks away.
Here's a PSA announcement. If you're bringing something like black bear, wild boar, whatever, just cook it. 165, that's all. It was in that newspaper of a potluck wild game dinner in another county, not here, not put on by us, that several people got trichinosis from it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bear. Alaska, I was here, has the highest trichinosis in the country because they consume the most black bear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever.
Makes
yeah.
sense.
Just cook it.
Antibiotic.
Yeah, just cook it. Yeah. No, what no raw bear. There?
I don't know. I mean, anything cool would be fun. Be, you know, if somebody's going somewhere where we don't have that type of game, like an elk or moose or bear would be great. I mean, we have bear, but a lot of people don't give theirs up.
Ali, dear me, I mean, if it's done in a way that I haven't seen it, or, you know, I don't care. Yeah.
One person mentioned they might be bringing some type of chowder, maybe with trout or some other type of fish, but...
Yeah, I don't know if she's serious about coming. My mother said she's going to do a smoked trout, and the trout came for that trout my wife caught in Finger Lakes, Cayuga Lake.
Damn. Awesome. Yeah, bring that.
It'd be smoked trout on crackers. Mm, good stuff.
Yeah, and we'll also have, you know, some items from the forest, so to speak, for auction. So,
what do you got?
So, I don't know. Maybe I want to wait all for right. people to okay. see.
You
show up
give
in
a it. Teaser now. At least one.
Well, so there's a star of the show item. So Mike Porter, the CFA board president, he's got this really beautiful cherry mantle. So that'll be there. It's really nice piece. I saw it today. So if somebody wants that to use for a project, fireplace mantle, you know, something like that, that would be really perfect. So that'll be there along with a few other items. And, hopefully we get a good turnout.
Pollocks are great. I mean, Bushkill Rod and Gun Club down in West Shokan, I used to go every year. I haven't been, unfortunately, in a few years, but it's just a simple potluck. It's the best food, because people, you know, they put their time into their own dish, and it adds up to quite an assortment of awesome dishes, I find.
Yeah.
But
people get creative, and they've got some cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
What's the cost, sir? Is there a cost?
There is no cost, so you can show up. We're asking for a suggested donation, so if you don't have a dish to pass, or if you do bring a dish to pass, this is to benefit CFA. So if you like and you're feeling generous, you can offer a donation. And I will say another one of the items, or quote-unquote items, that will be kind of raffled off is a membership to CFA for 1 year. So
what is the CFA?
So Catskill Forest Association, nonprofit organization. We work with private landowners and offer forestry education and services. So we come to your property, we offer all different types of programs relating to forestry and tree care, arboriculture, stuff like that. Small scale, most of the time, working with smaller landowners and getting consultation. That's usually where people start. And, you know, one of our field staff comes out to your property, answers any questions you have about your trees, your forest, and helps you kind of take the first steps into management and achieving your goals on your property. So along with a bunch of other events, free events and workshops and opportunities for forestry education. So, if you decide to come with a donation, we'll put in a raffle ticket or two for you and give one attendee a year of membership. So,
yeah. Well, I guess I'll be making maple peanuts. Did I say that?
Yeah.
And they are quite addicting. I love them. You add some salt, and they just crystallize, man. If you heat it up to a certain temperature, it crystallizes on the outside, and it's one of my favorite things to bring when I, you know, hike for an extended period of time or something. But it's good stuff.
Yeah.
It should be a winner. We'll see. I don't know.
Bringing the family?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're all coming. You know, my wife don't, you know, she sees the meal there. You know, that's another night, you know, to feed the kids.
There you go.
So I'm going to make the trip to Margaretville.
Yep.
What time is this?
This is so Saturday, this Saturday, March 16th, 5 p.m. Until about 8 p.m. or, you know, wherever the night takes us. But not too late because we're in the fire hall. So
the Margaretville Fire Hall.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Should be fun.
So firewood, starting to do firewood. And I feel like I'm on par for the same amount I burned last year. Like maybe a little over 2 cords. Typically, I won't say typically, well, whatever. On a decent cold winter, it's about 4 I burn, but man, I think I'm a little over 2 again.
Yeah, I'm going to be
under, I am wood rich.
I'm under 2. I've definitely burned less than 2. I think I'm going to fall in at the end of the year under 2.
Yeah.
Which is less than last year, and thought last year was light.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's been pretty mild.
It's been, yeah, very mild. You know, I think of excuses just to put wood in sometimes. I just, like, whatever, I got it, you know? Who cares? But.
Yeah, that's how I burn.
What's that?
I just look good excuse if it's a little bit of cold, and I know it's going to be colder in the morning. I'll just put a fire in there. But not so much lately. After this past week, I haven't been burning much.
Yeah.
How much you burn?
I probably burned less than 2 cords myself, yeah, from what I had.
Sweet.
How's your whatchamacallit?
Hold the
stuffing? Yeah. Fummel Gargan.
Tragedy struck.
Tragedy, uh-oh.
So I noticed one day that one side had kind of collapsed. I'm like, ah, damn.
What's it really called?
It's called a Holzhausen.
Okay.
Otherwise known as a beehive stacking method for firewood. It's about 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide, unfinished, if you can believe it. But it's taller than me. One side fell out, so I meticulously restacked that. And the next day, the opposite side kind of collapsed, but not as much. It's like, all right, I'll go. Before I put it back together, I might as well test it. So I gave it a little shake, and the whole thing collapsed.
Like a little shake? Oh, man. Wow, man.
So 3/4 of the sides have been collapsed. And
did your wife see this?
Oh, yeah.
Happened?
No, she didn't see it happen. She saw the aftermath. Awesome. But it's, you know, it's where it is. There's fill there, and the fill is fairly new. It's probably about 2 or 3 years old. So I don't know. It's probably still settling. And I think the freezing and thawing, because this happened in the last 2 weeks, had something to do with it. And also, I didn't really properly build it to begin with, and I kind of patched it up over time, but it's all red oak, and it's filled with ash and old dead elm and some apple. But the center core is still stable, but the sides have collapsed. So I think I'll just rebuild it one more time. Hopefully it'll last throughout the summer, and then I'll be burning it during the colder parts of the winter.
Maybe you've talked about this already, but what's supposed to, is there a benefit in stacking that way over just like a regular firewood pile?
So for me, I've said this before, there's not a lot of flat terrain where I am, so I'm trying to maximize smaller areas. Aesthetically, it's very beautiful, right next to some apple trees. You can almost see it from the road. And I like, if you build the walls stable enough, you can just toss wood in the middle. Maybe that's not how it's supposed to be done. Maybe you're supposed to stack wood in the middle. I don't know. But yeah, I like the fact that I can split wood at another location, bring it with my truck, back it up to it, and just toss it right in there in the middle. So I think it's pretty stable in the middle because, like I said, that core was still like almost 8 feet, but the walls had fallen down. So they got to be pitched in just the right way where if it were to collapse, everything collapses in. But yeah, that's what I've learned.
Yeah, I just question how much air flows in there.
I mean,
if it's not stacked right, I guess the idea is that it somehow creates like a draft, upward draft in the, I don't know.
Yeah, the hollow center kind of creates this chimney effect. That's the idea. But the wood on the edges, the oak, is pretty well seasoned. It's not there yet, but
yeah.
It's dry. So.
Yeah. I'm still rocking the carpeting, and I know people have heard me talk about this, and they're like, oh, my God, he's going to bring up the carpeting again.
Redneck. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Hell yeah. The carpeting is awesome, all right? So you find, and people are throwing out carpeting because that's no longer in vogue anymore. They like the wood floors, right? I get
just
it.
Threw some out and gave it to you.
I got it. So any of you people have some carpeting, I need a couple more sections. But
drop it off on Ryan's lawn.
It works great, man. Out. It's light, you know? It folds to the top of the pile. And
get different colors.
I got green and gray now.
So, nice.
Yeah, the there green carpeting I found that someone, some lovely, decent individual, threw into the side of a stream.
Ah.
So who knows what's in that carpeting if you're willing to back up a truck and throw it right into the stream. So, you know, it's been outdoors a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm sure whatever. But, yeah.
Nice.
Still nice. But we're just about out of time, believe it or not.
Wow.
That's it. So if you missed the show, it was From the Forest, and once in a while, the field staff of the Catskill Forest Association does a forestry check-in every first, second week of the month. But see you next week, and that's all I got.
Good night, everyone.
All right.
See you at the dinner.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing, and the icy wind, it blowed. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. Then the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.